Hello and welcome to Resettled, A Human Journey, the ECDC ACC podcast. This episode and this season of Resettled is sponsored by Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield. We're very grateful for their support. My name is David Combs and I'm your host. Let's get started. Today, we're going to be speaking with Bianca Wise, the owner and president of Home Helpers Home Care in Baltimore, Maryland. Bianca was born and raised in Baltimore in one of the toughest neighborhoods in the city. In a previous discussion, she told me about the challenges of growing up in the inner city and the stigma that sometimes comes with being from Baltimore. She was raised in a single parent household by a mother who worked intensely hard, and as Bianca told me, was never on government assistance. When Bianca graduated from high school, she went to work for the FBI in Washington, D.C. And after the events of September 11th, 2001, she resigned from the FBI and went to work for the Baltimore County Fire Department as a paramedic firefighter. In that role, she was promoted to lieutenant and was the first Black woman ever so promoted in that department. Today, Bianca is the owner and operator of Home Helpers Home Care. Bianca was bitten by the entrepreneur bug and has a huge passion and for personal drive and mentoring. She's a major believer in how a person's mindset is tremendously powerful. We're honored to have her join us for this episode of Resettled. Bianca, welcome, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, David. You know, when I hear that intro, it's still like surreal to me. Like, they talking about me?
You know, I often feel similarly when people introduce me in place, and I'm like, I'm just David. Just
right, like, who is that? What?
But on the other hand, when you sort of hear your story, as a person who's doing the intros, it's very difficult to want to be modest given all of your accomplishments. So, yeah. Like I say, we're very, very honored to have you on.
Thank you.
Of course. So, so you have, as I just said, a remarkable background, and you mentioned in a previous discussion that you and I had, that you grew up in a tough neighborhood in Baltimore. And can you tell us, and can you tell our listeners about your growing up years?
Sure. So, again, I love my city, you know, the Baltimore, born and raised in the Park Heights community, which, you know, when you hear in the media about the challenges that go on in Baltimore, that neighborhood absolutely is part of the challenge. But, you know, when it comes to the narrative that media puts forth, they fail to talk about the hope and the winners that actually come out of that community and other communities across Baltimore. Baltimore has so much talent and so many individuals who just push through, are resilient, has tenacity, and just go for it. And I'm one of them. So growing up, you know, I went to Park Heights Elementary School. That school isn't even there anymore. And then went on to Roland Park for my middle school education. And then I ended up at Dunbar. And what Dunbar showed me was the healthcare field. There was a Johns Hopkins Dunbar partnership. So when I got to 11th and 12th grade, I was able to go over to Johns Hopkins for a portion of my school day and work in various departments over there just to learn about the health profession and allied health profession. And that was pretty much, you know, and growing up, you know, we, at least for me, I didn't feel fear in my neighborhood. We were a very close-knit neighborhood. The neighbors watched out for all of us little kids. We knew that we couldn't act up because the neighbor up the street was going to tell my mother or my auntie that lived around the corner. So we better not, you know, be out here acting up. Again, grew up single parent household. My mom went to work every day, Monday through Friday. She commuted down to Washington, D.C. to the FBI building. For 25 years. And so just watching her get up every morning, 4 a.m., She would get dressed in her nice suits and get her briefcase and go marching out the door. And I always said, man, I want to be like a professional, you know, woman like her. And then the days that she would take me to work with her, that was like Christmas Day for me. Like, I would get up too and put my Sunday best on and would go out the door with my mommy and ride down to DC and spend the day with her at her workplace. And so I think, you know, that's what it really comes back to, having that support system and that network during those influential stages and ages that kind of gave us that hope that we can go beyond what our neighborhood says or what the statistics says and do great things.
Can you, so you said something there that was really interesting and sort of struck home for me. You talked about sort of the narrative and you talked a little bit about the stories that maybe the media doesn't tell about Baltimore. Can you maybe give listeners just a little bit of a sense of that and unpack that a little bit for us? I so agree. I'm going to give you an example that's probably a bad example, but I'm going to give it anyway. I was talking to someone, it was a number of years ago. He's a medical doctor and he was from Baghdad, Iraq. And we were talking and he and I were sort of standing next to each other and someone who was nearby us said something kind of bad about Baghdad. And I could tell that when that was said, it kind of struck him like right in the heart, like, oh, that's kind of hurt. And so he and I got to talking and I said, man, that's just not right. So, we just got to talking. I said, tell me about your favorite thing. If there was just one thing from before, back in those days, before the war, you know, what was it that was the thing you loved most that people don't understand about being in Baghdad? He said, you know what it was, man? He said, it was on a summer evening sitting on the river and you'd be at a restaurant, and they'd go fishing right there in the river. They'd catch the fish, reel it right up, and they'd cook it for you and you'd have dinner right then and there. So that's the thing I'll always miss. And those were like the little stories I think about Baghdad in that case that people don't talk about. And that's a thing that probably most folks wouldn't think about, but they ought to. So can you tell me, because I think you said that kind of, you had a similar sort of hopefulness in your tone about Baltimore. What kind of things should people know about Baltimore that they don't?
We're a hometown. I mean, so let's start with the sports side, right? So we have the Ravens, we have the Orioles, and that really does bring community together. And for on those days of baseball games and football games, we forget differences. We don't care about religion or political affiliation or race. Those stadiums are packed and everybody is enjoying themselves. And then Baltimore also has a culture about it that you cannot find anywhere else, the way we talk. We have a huge creative community here with Micah, but the culture and creativity that we just set as a trend, you can't find it anywhere else. Our food, our music, you know, Baltimore club music is something that you either love it or you hate it. But the people in Baltimore love it. And we're usually the only people that can dance to it as well, because it's so, you know, upbeat with a fast tempo. But, you know, it's the success stories that do come out of here. So if you research extremely successful people who have came out of Baltimore, you get some heavy hitters. And all across all type of industries, whether it's entertainment, business, education, you know, there's been some very prestigious and affluent people in this area. We have the Natty Bo. We have the little girl on the Utz chips. Does she have a name? Do you know the girl?
Oh, gosh, I don't. I should.
Right. But they are like our staples, so you'll see them. I don't know if they're a couple or not, but they look cute together, Natty Bo and the Utz girl. And that's just what I love about it. And when I go places, I've traveled out of the country, in the country, people will say, where are you from? Because I hear something with your accent. When I say Baltimore, they're like, I knew it was Baltimore.
Well, you noticed, you said there that there's some heavy hitters that have come out of Baltimore. And I think as people listen to this podcast, they're going to realize that you're probably one of them and are very much the kind of person and the kind of role model that anyone who's listening to this will gain a lot from hearing your perspective and insight. So
thank you.
I digressed a little bit there. So anyway, so bringing it back to and what's funny about these podcasts is that, you know, you can have a script all you want and the conversation tends to take its course the way it is. And that always makes it more pleasant and more fun. So you were a paramedic firefighter after 9/11. Can you talk a little bit about how you came? So like I said, in the intro, you were at the FBI, you left and you became a paramedic firefighter. How did you decide to do that? And what was it? What did it mean to you to leave the FBI and go to do that?
Well, the full backstory of that is, so once I left Dunbar, you know, I had this idea that I wanted to pursue a career in health. Wasn't really sure what it was going to be, kind of played around with being a nurse. Even at one point, I researched becoming a virologist to study viruses. So we all know what's been happening right now. And I'm like, dang, if I really would have followed that path, I could have been a Dr. Fauci of the world. But but then after I came out of high school, you know, my mom, she was on it. She's like, look, you either going to college or you going to work. And for me at that time, I said, well, just let me try the work thing. Like I got through my 12 years of school. Let me take a break. I didn't go straight on to college from high school. And because my mom had worked for the FBI for so long, you know, the relationship was, I was able to get an entry-level position at the FBI as a stenographer and administrative assistant. So that opened me up to a whole world of experience at a very, very early age of 19. And but even at 19, I still didn't feel like I was doing what I wanted to. So I ended up becoming a CNA, certified nurse assistant. And part-time, I would go and work at an assisted living, taking care of elderly people. And I was like, okay, it's something really to this. I like taking care of people. I like helping people. And that was like my part-time gig. And then 9/11 happened. And I still remember that day vividly. I remember what I had on that day. I remember the fear and anxiety that went on that day.
Were you in downtown Washington? Like when everything was happening? Oh my.
Yes, like in the midst of it. And I actually remember the phone call that came down from the New York field office after the first plane hit the Trade Center. And it was eerie. I still have this eerie feeling. And so once I finally got home, they had shut DC down. It took hours for us to get out of DC to get back up to Baltimore. And when I finally got home, the towers behind me, ironically, the picture behind me fell. Both of them had fell by the time I got home. Now, obviously, this was way before cell phone, like the sophisticated cell phone use that we have now. So communication was messed up. And it wasn't until I actually arrived home and turned on the news that I saw that the towers had came down. And just watching the news and seeing all the support and the resources that rushed into the scene, I don't know what it was in my brain to say, I want to do that. I don't know what it was. Watching the public safety, the firefighters and the EMS people, I was like, I want to do that. And so that led me into learning about EMS, fire, and ultimately, I got hired with the fire department in 2003 as a paramedic firefighter. And that is where I spent a total of 19.6 years between career and volunteer.
Can you help me understand sort of the role of the paramedic firefighter?
Mm-hmm. So for me, that role was self-fulfilling to be able to comfort someone or to help someone in their time of need. So 99.9% of the time, a paramedic firefighter is coming to the aid of someone who has had some type of incident, whether it's a medical incident or an accident. And it's usually a very scary time for them. And paramedics outside of the skill, you know, the skill that we gain through training, you know, we can intubate people, we can start IVs, we pretty much save lives. But outside of that, it's just this comfort. It's like an interpersonal skill, a soft skill that I seem to always have, where I can just come in and comfort that person, try to get them to relax, and make them feel just a little bit better with what they are experiencing. And that was, for me, the days where I came home and was like, okay, yeah, today was a good day. And when that patient just, you know, we take them to the hospital, we drop them off, and they either reach out for my hand to shake my hand and say, thank you so much for helping me. You know, that those are the days that I would come home and say, yeah, that today was a good day.
No question. Are you able? I'm so interested. Are you able to? And if you're not, it's okay. Mm-hmm. Are you able to share a couple of those moments, obviously without the identifying details for people, but are you able to share any moments for our listeners where they might be able to sort of as if they were sort of there with you for a minute to understand what those kinds of moments look like and what may just maybe a moment or two that were very meaningful to you?
Man, it's been so many, but
I'm sure there must be.
I delivered a baby in the middle of a snowstorm on the side of 695.
All right.
Right at the 795 exit. That was one that's very memorable. But then we also go through tragedy. Sure. You know, and one that sticks out to me was a young child who was killed at the 695 and 83 split 2 days after Christmas.
Oh, my.
And that's when I was actually in the role of lieutenant and managing a scene that size and that traumatic and that chaotic. You know, that it stands out. We had to activate Maryland State Police helicopter, two of them, because there were several patients at the scene. We had to make sure that we took care of the person who created the accident because they were shook up. It goes from one spectrum to the next, you know. So I could probably have you here for days talking about, you know, all the calls and situations that I've experienced.
I have absolutely no doubt of that. And I'm certain, you know, those are the kinds of stories that I hope, people have stories like that. I'm sure you have some remarkable ones. And I often hope that like people write those things down somewhere. Cause those are sort of thing, like, I think in retrospect, you know, that people sometimes think, oh, I'll remember that. And then years and years later, maybe they don't as well as they wish. So anyways, I guess what I'm trying to say is I wish we could talk and go on and on. Those are the things that stick out.
And I have one that kind of connects me to where I am now.
Oh, please. And, yeah.
So I remember it was a snowstorm, you know, Baltimore in the snow. Right. So, it was a snowstorm, and we got a call from an elderly person in the area who they were pretty much nervous about being in the house by themselves during snow. So me and my partner showed up, and there was nothing medically wrong with this person, but I will never live this down. And my partner actually took a picture of me, and I still have the picture. He sent it to me. Well, ultimately, what ended up happening was we went to the store and brought a rotisserie chicken, some rice, and some frozen vegetables, and came back to the person's house, meal prepped them, put meals together, cut the chicken up, put the meals together, put them away in the refrigerator so they could just pop them in the microwave. We made sure that the pet had food. I actually took the pet outside for a walk in the snow, slipping and sliding up the street to take them for a walk, and brought them back and just made sure that they were set up and felt somewhat comfortable to get through the snowstorm until their grandchild could get to them from another part of the state. And so when I look back on that, that kind of set me up now for, you know, home helpers and providing safety and security for the elderly, you know, in their home. So that's one another story that sticks out.
Well, that is kind of a really excellent transition to it. So, I mean, so you were on you said you were part of the fire department, you know, for very nearly 20 years. And then you ended up making this transition. Like you said, you got bit by the entrepreneur bug. So what was it that that sort of called you out of being within the fire department to operating your own organization? I mean, that is a big shift. I imagine there must be something in your heart, like when you try to do that, that's, oh my, that's a bit of a risk. You must feel that right in your soul a bit. Can you talk about that kind of that change and what drove you to it?
Yeah, sure. So entering into the fire service, you have to be a risk taker. Like, you have to have a type A personality, probably borderline something not quite right in the head to consciously, you know, go into that type of field. But I've always been one to just take risks. You know, like, I left the FBI to go to the fire department. You know, who leaves the FBI? Who leaves a federal government, you know, career and goes to the fire department? So I almost felt like I had came to the end of my chapter. That's the best way that I could label it. You know, I worked so hard. I became dedicated and committed to the point I was able to promote to lieutenant. And then serving in that role for several years, I started to really discover my leadership ability. You know, my critical thinking skills and how my problem solving skills and how all of this experience and all this skill is starting to come together in a package that just doesn't fit here anymore. And I started to feel like I could take all this whole package somewhere else and make now an even bigger impact in my community. So that's the best way I can describe it. It's like I woke up one day and I said, yeah, I think I'm done here. I think whatever I was supposed to do at this moment, I've completed it. So now let me take the leap and see, you know, what's next.
I love that perspective that you just shared about a chapter ending. I love that. That's just such a lovely way to describe something that probably was very wonderful being on the fire department. Mm-hmm. And it's not that you inherently want to leave it, but it's that, okay, the chapter's over now. It's time for the next chapter. That's I love that way of describing it. That's wonderful. So as you were getting ready to wrap that up, did you have a sense of what that next thing was going to be? Or did it take you a while to sort out, okay, it's going to look like this?
So I will say that, so I'm a visionary, always been a visionary. I see the vision. I see what most people don't, and we'll get stuck in trying to figure out, if that makes sense. Where I see the end goal. Like the end goal is vividly in front of me. And so the confidence that I have in the vision and the end goal, I just kind of go towards it. And I feel like if I don't follow this, why do I keep seeing this vision, right? Why do I wake up every morning? And for me, the vision was freedom. Like, very simple, freedom. Now, there's details that go with freedom. What does freedom look like for me? It's time freedom. That was the main thing. I wanted my time back. I want to be able to get up when I want. I don't want to have to sleep in somebody else's firehouse overnight. I want to take vacation when I feel like it. So time freedom was my priority. Creative freedom, because I have so many ideas and so many things that I want to venture off into and experience. So creative freedom and obviously financial freedom, you know, so freedom is my end goal. And how that shows up visually, I saw that I can only accomplish that through business ownership.
So, and now we're way off script, but so now I'll ask another, that makes the conversation more fun. So question for you, do you suppose, because I have often found in my life that sometimes people who have that sort of entrepreneurial spirit and have are visionaries struggle a bit in sort of a bureaucratic, you know, system. Because you said a few minutes ago, like, what kind of person, you know, just leaves the FBI career? I'm like, actually, I might have a thought about who that kind of person is. It's the kind of person who's entrepreneurial and is probably mm-hmm. the kind of person who has a big vision. What do you think? Does that sort of describe you, or am I off base?
Oh, no, you're complete. Yeah. So most of the, so I was able to get through my career mostly unscathed, but I did hit challenges and bumps. And I will honestly say that it was because of the free-spirited, free-thinking person I am. So when you enter into bureaucratic or government, you have to become a very boxed, you know, polished individual.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And for me, I didn't always show up in the box and polished. So that's where I got hung up a lot in my career. I would say something that didn't fit, or my attitude, however we want to label that, just didn't fit the mold. You know, conformity is the word that I'm looking for.
Right. Yeah.
It's always been hard for me to conform to systems and rules and boxes. So that absolutely did play a part in making the decision of what the next step is going to be, because it absolutely was not going to be going to another place of employment.
Yeah, well, there is. I mean, there's just that sense of spreading your wings. And one thing that I've often in discussions with folks who have that entrepreneurial spirit, I love the notion that sometimes people have of, you know what, this is my idea and it might fly, it might sink, but I'm okay with that if it's my idea that sort of rises or falls on its merits. And I love that kind of entrepreneurial courage in a lot of ways that it takes to have that. It's really remarkable. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us a bit more about Home Helpers and what is both the mission sort of in general, and what does the day-to-day look like for you?
Sure. So here at Home Helpers, our mission is to become the most trusted and respected provider of in-home care services in the Baltimore metropolitan area. So we come in and we do private duty in-home care for seniors and people with continuing care needs in the home. We all know that we all are most happy where we are most comfortable, which is home. And especially with our elderly and aging community, they want to be home. And we just are able to bring that type of, that level of care, whether it's just the simple assistance with meal prepping, or if they are a total care client that requires assistance with daily living activities, we can bring that into the comfort of their home.
So really, in terms of starting up this business, this is actually when you came into contact with ECDC through their enterprise development group. Can you tell our listeners about how you and ECDC partnered to make this this fantastic business that you've got a reality?
Absolutely. So the first thing that you think about with business ownership is that big C word, capital. And so I knew going in that I was going to have to start aligning with financial partners and people who could provide funding. Even though the business is about 90% self-funded, I still needed to reach out to create partnerships for operational funds and things of that nature. So a friend of mine who is big in the Baltimore community and the Chamber of Commerce actually referred me over to Enterprise Development Group for their micro loan program, where they do fund startups and small businesses to get you up and going. And then they also give you the education on how to fix your credit, how to build up business credit. So then you can become what you call bankable, and you can go to an actual financing institution, a bank, to get, you know, SBA loan or bigger type of loans.
Now, the last time we were speaking, you told me that since you got everything going and started, that Home Helpers is doing very well. Can you talk a little bit about not only how well it's doing, but how some of the response that you're getting from sort of the community and from others?
Oh, sure. So, yeah, it's funny. Today, I was sitting down with the coin people, with my CPA bookkeeper. So the business had 700% growth through 2020, through a pandemic. So you have to think about it in several ways. And for me, here again, I go back to that end goal, the vision, right? So launching the business, I always said we're going to be professional, we're going to provide quality. And I really didn't think about the money. So what I'm saying is being driven by the important things, quality, professionalism, has really, for me, I believe, has been the catalyst to have so much growth and to really become known and respected in the elder care community here in Baltimore. If you Google us, we have a 5-star rating. Our clients are just elated with the caregivers and the service that they come in and bring. And it really does go back to being passionate about what I do, hiring people who are passionate about what they do, and just keeping professionalism and quality in the forefront, you know, of the business to drive it.
Now, you said something a second ago that I think we should come back to. It's really important, I think. So you talked about this remarkable growth rate in the middle of a pandemic, but my goodness, you were starting a company in the best of circumstances is going to be challenging, but you were starting a company in the middle of a pandemic, a once in a century experience. Can you talk a little bit about the challenges that were sort of, that you had to uniquely face that maybe other people wouldn't have had to face? If you'd been starting this a couple of years ago, it wouldn't have been this. Mm-hmm. What kind of unique challenge sets did the pandemic present for you?
Well, fear, you know, and we were all thrown into this together. Like there's experts of the field, you know, but honestly, nobody knew, or and still, in my opinion, knows how, when, or just the overall of this pandemic. So we were all just thrown into, you know, this. And then you have to couple it with the type of clients that we serve, are elderly. And a lot of our clients are already alone, are in what we call vulnerable situations. And then it becomes, okay, we have this pandemic. People are walking around with this virus. Should I allow a caregiver to come into my house? But if I don't have the caregiver come, who is going to be here to help me? Because I can't totally help myself. So the biggest challenge in the beginning for me was sitting down with our clients and actually having a discussion, because a lot of them called the cancel service. There were a few families that called the cancel service. Everybody, again, fear. But just having those hard conversations to say, okay, we understand, we're working through it. You know, we're getting updated through the Department of Health, the CDC. We're trying to stay ahead of information. We completely understand that you're fearful, but what is your alternative if you stop having your caregiver come in here to help you? Because if the caregiver doesn't come, if your family isn't able to travel in right now, you know, do you want to go to a facility, which we all saw what was happening in the media with communities? And so for me, that was the biggest challenge, just having those hard conversations with the clients who we had on board at the time.
Now, did you ever struggle with, was there any moment where you felt like, hey, actually, beyond the challenges that we're going to have with our clients and the fears that they might be experiencing, were there any moments where you felt like, hey, actually, we're not going to be physically permitted to operate? Because, I mean, certainly at the beginning, there's a lot of sense of, hey, this is shut down, that shut down. Did you have to endure that? Or was that something that, since you were in a healthcare capacity, didn't really impact you?
Yeah, that didn't really impact me because, again, you know, in elder care, there's multiple options. Someone can go to a long-term care facility, they can go to a retirement community, or they can stay home. And at that point, even up until now, skilled nursing facilities, long-term care facilities, and retirement communities stop admitting. So it's like, even people who were in the process of moving into communities, all of that had to stop. We actually had to picked up a few clients during that time who needed care, but their moving process was stopped. Moving into a facility was stopped until they could figure out how they could safely move that person in by getting them tested, keeping them quarantined. So we had several clients that went through that. It was like a holding period. So never crossed my mind that, oh my goodness, we're going to be out of business, because we're in the business of taking care of people. And it just so happens that a lot of those people, they don't have any other resources to take care of them.
So with all that, you talked a little bit about your clients, just the fears that they experience. And of course, I mean, I imagine for anyone who's in that circumstance, I can only imagine you'd just be overwhelmed with fear. But can you talk a little bit about how the pandemic has affected your clients? And just beyond the fears that they might have, they're going to be facing social isolation, loneliness. I mean, and you've touched on these things a little bit, but can you talk a little bit about the experience that they're going through right now?
Absolutely. So, you know, our elderly community, again, such tenacious people, they've been through a lot. You know, they've seen a lot. Some of them were around with the Spanish flu. So it was contrasting. We had some who were just very nonchalant about it. A few of them were still trying to go out to the stores, to the banks. And we were like, hey, hold it down. Like, it's best if you just have a seat and relax. And they couldn't understand, like, why can't I go outside? And it's like, not right now. Let us get some stuff under control first. And then, like you said, on the opposite spectrum, people who elderly were already socially isolated and lonely, a large part of them, prior to the pandemic. And so things like the senior centers, adult daycare centers, volunteering was what were the activities that kept them going, kept them feeling like they had a purpose, you know, kept them engaged with other people. And then when all of that shut down, we did see a lot of what could be considered depression and leading into what we call a failure to thrive. So we got plenty of calls from people who are saying, like, you know, there's nothing physically wrong with mom, but she's just not her old self. And that's because it's that loss of belonging. You know, if you've been going to the senior center and seeing your friends, you know, 3 days a week for the last 3 years, and then that just came to a stop immediate overnight, now what? You know, now what happens? So we did really see the ones who were like, yeah, okay, pandemic, slamdemic, you know, I need to get to the store. And then the other ones who really took a toll emotionally and, you know, had to figure out how to keep them engaged, you know, puzzles. What else can we do to enrich your life? You know, online classes, online Zoom calls with your children, your grandchildren, things like that.
That's really fantastic. Now, that reminds me of a thing we had talked about previously, where you had talked about how you're a big believer in mindset, and the mindset and how powerful that can be. So can you talk about sort of, and I'll sort of ask this in two ways. So one, can you talk about mindset as, like you said, as it relates to your clients? But then once we talk about that, I want to try and remember that to talk about sort of mindset advice for people who are thinking about starting their own business. So maybe we'll talk about clients first, and we'll talk a little bit about mindset for business.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when you say mindset of clients, you mean the actual client or?
Sure. So I'm thinking about, like you said, like finding ways to keep them working. You're talking to family. You know, how do you find ways to try to like help them with their mindset as they're going through these things? And maybe that is kind of just what you were talking about, how, you know, Zoom calls and different activities. But is there anything in particular that you think of to help with their mindset in particular?
Oh, absolutely. And so here we do encourage our caregivers to find out the most they can about, you know, what the client likes to do, what they used to do, you know, what type of professional background did they have, and try to curtail the day around activities that will get them engaged. You know, we've had everything from people who were bidwist card players and had never heard of it until we started the client, and that was joy for them. So they actually ended up teaching the caregiver how to play bidwist. Piano players, a violinist, a ballerina. Our clients have some amazing background stories. So we encourage the caregiver to get in there and find out what are those things that make them tick, that make them glow, you know, put the smile on their face when they start talking about it, and then they won't stop. You know, a few of our clients really into cars. So one of our caregivers actually went out and purchased the sets where you put the cars together. And that was something very creative and something meaningful for that client. He really enjoyed that time with that caregiver. So just, and honestly, elderly for the most part are storytellers. They love to tell their stories and they will tell them over and over again. And we tell our caregivers that you sit and you listen attentively every time they tell you that story. And that's what's gotten us through, mainly with the clients, keeping them engaged.
I absolutely love that. Just what a thoughtful approach. That's just truly a wonderful thing to hear. So in that same kind of space, the mindset that you have brought to all of this, and the mindset that you have had of this courage and this entrepreneurial spirit, to run an organization through a challenging time. I wonder if you can, if we change gears just a little bit, for other people out there who might be listening and who are thinking about kind of hearing you and maybe having that little bit of inspiration from like, yeah, you know what, that's, I understand that. I understand that feeling of being boxed in, and I understand that feeling of sort of never quite fitting the mold of, you know, working in organization X or Y, and they want to do their own thing. What kind of mindset does it take, and what kind of what would you say if you're giving someone advice about mindset for founding their own business or for taking that kind of a leap?
So just do it. For me, and I have a very bold, I've always had a very bold approach to things. And for me, I can't think about it. I have to make the decision and execute. And so, and that's really with everything. So successful people are decisive. And so if you're waking up every day and you dread going into your workplace and you find yourself 6 out of the 8 hours in the day, you're doodling on a piece of paper or you're researching a business idea where you have absolutely no production in what you're supposed to be doing for work, that is a sign that your journey is trying to lead you somewhere. And so then you just have to decide, do I sit here and remain unhappy? For me, it was 10 years. I had 10 years left officially before I reached an official retirement date. And I had that conversation. Do I sit here unhappy in a box, you know, feeling boxed in for 10 years, or do I just bet on me? Like take the leap. And then gathering all your background, just think about everything that you've learned, you know, all the skills that you have applied to that position. What you've done, classes that you've taken, people you've met, like just sit there and just put it all together. When I did that, I looked at it and I was like, if I can make it here, I can make it anywhere. So that's my one word, decisiveness. Decide and then commit and just go for it.
I love that point you made about betting on you. I truly love that. That's a thing that I think maybe, again, I think people probably need to hear in their life. Because if they are sitting there at a desk doodling, you know what? Bet on yourself and be decisive about it. I love that. Truly wonderful. So as we're coming to the end of our time, I wonder if you have any last thoughts about the goals you have for your business in the coming year.
So have you ever heard the saying, if your goals don't scare you, they're not big enough?
I have heard that and I like it.
I'm terrified right now. But no, goals are just to keep scaling. You know, I'm big about providing employment opportunity back into the Baltimore community. So just bringing on more caregivers, employing more people into management, and serving our elderly, you know, making sure that if they decide that they want to live out their golden years in the comfort of their own home, they have the absolute right and audacity to do that. And we are just going to come in and make sure that we support them and love them and encourage them until whenever their end is. And Yeah, so just becoming a household name in Baltimore, Home Helpers, reaching back again, mentoring young business owners, and just growing and scaling Home Helpers to a large, meaningful, and valuable organization.
Well, it sounds like you have a very exciting year ahead. I wonder, last question, I wonder, is there any way, if someone's listening to this and they want to be supportive of you and your business, is there anything people can do?
Sure. They can follow us across all the social media platforms at Home Helpers of Baltimore. And that is on Facebook. We are Home Helpers Baltimore on Instagram. Also on LinkedIn. You can find us on LinkedIn. They can go to our website as well, which is www.homehelpershomecare.com/NW-Baltimore and find us that way as well.
Well, very much encourage anyone who might be listening to do exactly that. Well, with that, Bianca, this has been a wonderful conversation and it has been an honor to speak with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, David. I had a good old time.
This was a lovely way to spend some time. I did too. Okay. To all of our listeners, thank you so much.